Well, hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon, and it's time for a podcast. This is going to be a great one because I need to know about this. You need to know about this. We're interviewing Dr. Nick Truby. He is an exercise physiologist and certified strength and conditioning specialist, and he has years of experience. He's going to teach us about the importance of muscle as we enter into menopause and perimenopause. And it's all really science-based. He has his PhD from University of Kentucky. He focuses on bone density optimization, which the real reason we want big muscles is we want big bones. And I think this is such a trending and timely topic. Everyone probably is having early osteopenia from their GLP-1s, and we need to talk about what's going on with women and muscles. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Dr. K, for having me. Appreciate it.
So, Nick, have you always worked so closely with muscles and bone density? What kind of brought you in to focus on bone density optimization through muscle work?
Absolutely. Yeah. So it has been, especially for the last 20 years or so, this has been my priority of really focusing on this group specifically, just because it's, when we look at women, perimenopause, postmenopause, we tend to see, if we're not really focusing on maintaining or improving, we tend to see large losses in both bone and muscle mass, which lead to lots of negative health consequences. Shifting the mindset of what fitness used to look like or may have looked like for 30 or 40 years to what it can look like to lead you to a more robust, energetic, adventure living life after 50, strength and muscle mass is the way to go.
So, why do you think bone health is still kind of so overlooked? Like, people don't really worry about their bones till they get that first DEXA scan and it says mild osteopenia. Like, I just had one and I was like,
Did
what do
you?
you mean osteopenia in the hips? And I've been doing squats, like 50 squats a day for a year.
It
What's going on?
it's and to be honest, most of the people that I work with are relatively fit and have been exercising for a long period of time. But we do a huge disservice because typically the first any kind of scan or tool to get insight into our bones is not until 60 or 65 years old.
Wow. When should it be? When should we get our first DEXA scan in an ideal world?
Ideal world, probably 30 would be a great time,
Dang.
because
Wow.
that is when you get your T score, which we use for indication of osteoporosis. We are re relating that to your 30-year-old self. That's that what that T score means.
Oh, so it'd be
So
nice to have an indicator at
it would be
30.
great if we could have the number of when we're supposed to have the most, rich, high-density bones. It would be nice to have that number.
That's so true. Instead, we get it at age 60. You're
At
absolutely
60,
right.
usually 65 for most people.
Yeah, I got mine a bit early because I was just curious. Because I think if you have a mother or grandmother that has osteoporosis or osteopenia, you should definitely tune in early, like in your 30s and 40s.
Absolutely. If you have family history, the earlier the better.
Yeah. How connected are muscles to your bones, bone density, fall prevention?
That's a great question. I've seen people who are really fit endurance wise, so relatively strong if we look at it from an endurance perspective, but may have low density bone or low bone density in terms of quality and quantity. And a lot of factors that go towards that. It could be a fueling issue, it could be an overexercising, under feeding issue for a long time. Maybe that person never reached peak bone density to begin with. And then there are physiological adaptations that happen with a lot of endurance training where our body wants to become efficient, where we can be burning less calories per step. And by doing so, we're essentially reducing the weight of our frame where we can lose bone mass in that process. So lots of things can happen in that sense. On the flip side, I rarely see someone who has a higher amount of muscle mass and has been really focused on building strength and muscle for a long period of time. Very rarely will I see that person have brittle bones. Might have lower density, but quality can be still very good.
And then do you think there's a preference with aerobic exercise walking versus resistance training? I feel like everyone is talking about muscle heavy lifting, resistance training, but I don't know how easy that is for women and the population in general to really dive into. It feels intimidating. It feels like I don't know where to start, and also I can't even lift heavy weights yet,
Yeah, well, the approachability of that line lift heavy is not very easily accessible.
It's not.
It's not, it's, it can be, it, yeah, I would say that you're spot on. However, when we think about lifting heavy, it's always going to be relative. Heavy for someone could be a warm up for somebody else, and vice versa. So I look at it at a perspective of, not so much focusing on the number that you're lifting or moving. We're honing in more so on the level of challenge that we're trying to eventually get to in as part of our workout, and whatever that number is on the weight that you're lifting is just the number, right? So there's some conditioning that goes on in there. But even in, some of the best studies that we've seen from a bone health perspective that do quote unquote lift heavier, still have kind of a fundamental ease up period before they get to that point. So we're still making sure you approach it from, let me master some of the techniques of these fundamental movements. Let me understand how my body moves. Let me start with lighter resistance, then gradually work my way up. Don't feel like you have to jump straight into in what you're envisioning in your mind of lifting super heavy. Give yourself a little a small time period of easing into that, and that will you'll be very thankful on the back end.
What's a
Yeah.
good startup plan? Because I do think that that is super intimidating. Like, when I realize I personally need to do strength training, but in my head, I have all these images of women and doing CrossFit and
Sure.
dragging a tractor across the gym. Like, I'm just like, oh no,
Don't
my
want to drag
back
tractors, Dr. K? What's up with
hurts.
that?
Yeah, no, I went to the gym with my husband and he made me do one of those. It was like just such a male-centered approach to how to grow muscles. I don't know. But you're being a male and working with lots of women. How do you get women started on that journey? And knowing that we come into it deconditioned, having not taken care of ourselves, being like child-focused for all this time. Some of us now are entering, in, of course, into menopausal changes, and some of people are having GLP-1 changes, which I equate with advanced aging.
For sure.
So, like, what is the best dip your toe in the water, and is it different for each of those groups?
I mean, it can be a little bit different depending on, the severity of, how much are we thinking about a setback or an injury. But realistically, I like to keep things really simple, because the more simple you can make the entire program as a whole, it becomes much more approachable. People can buy in much easier. There's not that level of intimidation. So, movements that can load our bodies appropriately and intentionally are, our squatting exercises. You can start with a chair squat, right? Up and down out of a chair, build your technique, slowly progress over many stages to get to the point where you are comfortable, doing it like a goblet squat, maybe, where you can challenge yourself. Great data on like a step up exercise where you're using maybe a aerobic riser or maybe a box to step up and down from. You can do that body weight. You can do an assisted body weight. You can progress to loaded movements. So it's, nothing is overly intimidating from a movement perspective. It's really just allowing yourself and kind of dropping the ego and or, worry of what it sh you, in your mind thinks it's going to look like. And really just kind of starting body weight, understanding how your body moves, get your technique down, and then we can really progress slowly, because it's really it's a duration game, right? We're doing a marathon, not a sprint. To see bone turnover, it's going to take some time. So there's really no rush to jump into, challenging yourself from a resistance perspective. So there's easy ways to build some confidence. I found that the confidence part is the biggest barrier to overcome initially.
I think if there were like a top five or top 10 exercises to start on that are evidence-based, what would you say those are?
Definitely. So your squat,
Okay.
there's the step up exercise. The biggest one that's I always say is one of the best exercises for bone health and the worst exercise for bone health. It's the razor thin line, and that's like your deadlift or your Romanian deadlift movement, just because it's so technique based. And if you're using your body inappropriately, it can put some additional strain on lumbar areas that we might be worried about. If you do it correctly, it targets the body exactly how you want to. A farmer's carry or a suitcase carry, where you're carrying something relatively heavy and either walking or marching in place, great way to mechanically load our bodies and see some compression. but do it in a neutral spine supported position. And then the last one that has some really good data from a resistance training perspective is the overhead shoulder press. Get weight over our head, so we're kind of indirectly loading our spine and seeing that vertical acting force that happens through our spine down through our hips to the floor. So those five, you look into the research, have really good data for both full body strength, muscle mass, and from a bone health perspective. Those are really good movements. And on top of that, if you can, and this is kind of to, you have to approach with white gloves a little bit, is impact training. I'm not sure if you've heard much data on impact training.
About jumping or putting some
Yeah.
stress on the bones. Yeah.
Basically, yeah. So it's not the physical, if you look at jumping, there's two parts to the jump. There's the jump up, and then there's the land part of it. And the landing is where we're receiving the impact, right? We're going from it, we're accelerating downward to the ground, and we stop abruptly. So that's the part that we really are using from a bone health perspective. It's also a pretty big demand on our physiology, like our soft tissue and our connective tissue and our joints, those areas. So we kind of have to slowly ease our way into it. But from the stimulus that our osteocytes and our bones need to see, that's kind of a top tier category for really, moving the needle in the right direction.
Yeah, I've been reading a lot about jumping and how a double jump is better than a single jump. Can you talk about that?
Potentially, I think there's value in both. I think the double jump allows for a little bit more time as far as in practicing kind of your landing, compared to that single jump. If it's a higher jump, a more intense jump, it is a pretty abrupt stop, right? So you might see 6 to 7 or more times body weight, which that's obviously exceeds the threshold that we need, but it could potentially be more than enough for a lot of people. Right. So the double jump gives you a little bit of leeway of those compressive forces because you're diminishing some of those through soft tissue and tendon elasticity from that first landing to the second jump, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. And when you talk about step up, do you how big is the step up? Can it be like a 6-inch step up? Should it be a 1 foot, 2 foot?
Love that. Great question. Yeah, I get this question all the time. Ideally, if you're looking at it from really loading and targeting like femoral head and femoral neck, right? That's the when you get your IDEXA scan, that's the number you're going to see. The greater the range of motion, typically the better, right? And that usually means somewhere around when your foot is on the box stepping up, your knee and your hip are around 90 degrees. Now you have to be a little leery because that is difficult. So if this is a challenging movement, there's absolutely nothing wrong with starting at maybe a 6 or an 8 inch step, something closer to like the stairs in your house, right? Just to get a feel for, is it putting too much stress on my patella or my knee, or is my hip getting taxed too much or whatever. So I always recommend start with a comfortable lower box, get a feel for it. If your body responds well to it, you tolerate it well, you can still bump that height up a little bit.
I do hear a lot of my female clients telling me that they're exercising, but they're not able to gain muscle, or so their work effort is not translating into things they see. Is that just from protein deficit or just bad training or not enough reps?
It could be potentially both. I mean, the fueling component is definitely going to have an influence on your capacity to improve strength. If you look at it from a training side, really to start influencing strength, we need somewhere around, at least 70% of your one repetition maximum that you're lifting. So that would be like, if I said, "Hey, Dr. K, let's do a squat." You would choose a weight that you could do maybe 12 times, but you'd be almost ready to be like done after that, right? So taxing yourself enough to challenge that level of strength to improve.
Okay, that's perfect. I think that also menopause has different demands on the body. How do you advise your patients that are in the peri state? And perimenopause starts early these days at like 35, 40. And then how do you advise differently for actual full on menopause?
For sure. Yeah, I think both populations, you can kind of take a similar approach, especially if they don't have much experience resistance training and or impact training. And it kind of goes back to what I mentioned before is that we, taking a step back, to those fundamental movements of how can I do those movements body weight? Can I teach the breathing, the correct breathing strategies for these to maintain intra-abdominal pressure and support my spine going through these ranges of motion, right? Can I prepare my body, maybe even using like a tabletop or a quadruped position where you're doing like your hip circles and your bird dog movements just to kind of teach how to move around my body while maintaining that neutral spine, right? Very fundamental movements that have a lot of value. Even in more advanced clients that I work with, I always have a phase of let's take it back to the fundamentals so I can see how well you can do these. Then I feel more comfortable with how aggressively we can progress, if that makes sense. So, just taking a step back to evaluate from, I don't want to say easier, but a lighter overall demand on your body. And from that, a person that knows what they're doing can have a better idea of how much to tax you moving forward.
Yeah, but if like physically the exercise don't need to be different at one stage of life or another, really, right? Just based off
Yeah.
your baseline.
Most of those movements are ones that we have to be able to do just to have any kind of capacity in our daily lives. Now, there's different modifications and variations of those exercises you can use. Still challenge those body parts and muscles that we're trying to engage. But realistically, the exercises, it's not smoke and mirrors. It's not overly fancy. It's kind of the basics that have the biggest value.
As I see aging parents happening, I kind of want to think about what exercise I should do now to prevent the frailty issues that I've seen in my own family and all of my patients too. Actually, I see that they come in and they have trouble getting out of a chair, that upper body strength that they also can't, pull themselves up. So, like, are there a couple of dedicated things we should do in our 50s and 60s to make sure that when we're 70 and 80, we have the ability to not be so frail and to have mobility.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think, a lot of that goes to the rate of decline is much quicker once we get, in our sixth decade of life and after compared to our third decade. So making sure that we have a certain level of consistency, I think number one is the underlying most important aspect of any program is that we have to continue to show our bodies that stimulus. If we stop, even for, 2, 3 months at a time, we can really see drastic changes. So, making sure it's a part of a routine that you can maintain and do and have sustainability, there's a lot of value there. But that sit to stand test, always a great test. I use it quite a bit because it does give you a lot of insight to lower body strength and power. And I think I'm just actually so funny you brought that up because I'm reading a study right now about the importance of training, especially after 60. The element of power. And that's just your capacity to move things quickly and how it engages our nervous system. And that really goes along with as we age, that rate of decline is much quicker than previously. So making sure we can still move things quickly.
Yeah, like slow pushing up is not as effective. Like it shows deterioration of strength a bit.
It can. Yeah. So slower movement's great because you can really lock in and have focus on what your body is doing. Being able to, stand up quickly or press that dumbbell overhead quickly, those things are so important from a nervous system approach and being able to engage our muscles quickly to navigate, all the challenges of our everyday movements.
Talk a little bit about the GLPs because they're epidemic in California. For them, it's all good. We're getting metabolically healthy, but the first generation GLPs, people thought that they attacked muscle mass, and really, the studies that I have read don't show that. They show that the muscle loss is related to calorie deficit and protein deficit and lack of training. And what are your thoughts on it?
I haven't had a lot of exposure to the people I work with. Realistically, most of my clients are underweight to begin with, which is kind of interesting, which always makes me question, are we even reaching peak bone mass in general? Right? Having that 30-year-old DEXA scan would be fantastic from my perspective, if we could promote that. But yeah, most 90% of the clients that I work with have been kind of undersized most of their life. and are now seeing in real time, has that had any influence or not? I don't know, but their bone mass is less than optimal.
Yeah. I haven't seen a lot of studies looking at DEXA scans for people beginning and ending their GLP or staying on it for a bit of a duration, but I'm pretty sure it's going to show osteopenia and early changes. So you should definitely help us come up with a strategy for that.
Absolutely. I mean,
It's all
yeah,
the same. It's just exercise and be consistent, but.
that's the key part is, you might see it more than me, but how much are we taxing our bodies from a physical perspective while we're on that medication? I don't know. It
I mean,
probably
you're,
less because the ones
yeah.
that are attracted to that method might not be already exercising as much. I don't, I'm speaking in generalizations here, but
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. But so people that are starting GLPs now, we are advert we're telling them and we're teaching them to start resistance strength training. So, would there be a set a proper way to start that, or is it just go get a trainer and go to the gym?
yeah, I think that's going to be helpful. But even then, if you're kind of on your own, just kind of going at a full body approach, making sure we're, not resorting back to, which there's nothing wrong with it because there's great results from like split routines. But I found that it's very difficult to, if you're going to go in and do like arms on Monday and legs on Tuesday, and, it's very difficult to accrue enough overall volume for each body part to really make a difference. Unless you have the time and dedication to really, go all
Yeah.
in.
And one of the problems is you lose body mass, So if you're getting less body mass in general and your muscles and bones are carrying less weight, that's already like a negative reinforcement cycle to
For
the
sure.
bones. Yeah, to
Yeah,
all the bones.
we're not exactly in an anabolic state, on a medication like that. So I think it's
Yeah.
more of a protective mechanism, I think the word you can use, of trying to limit the amount of loss while still keeping a robust nervous system to be able to engage your muscles.
What does the research show right now about protein and what the levels are that we should be taking for optimal muscle health?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, if you look at the governmental standards, those are very low. I
Yeah, they
think that
are.
what the US government is saying is it's 0.8 grams per kilogram body weight. Which that is like probably less than half of what you should be eating, right? Most of the time, if we're really trying to prioritize strength and bone mass, we're probably closer to 1 pound or 1 gram per pound of ideal body weight.
A
So
gram per pound. Wow.
it's a lot. I mean,
120 grams in a day.
that is a lot, but realistically, if you're, a medium moderate sized female, maybe you're 120 to 150 pounds. If you can get over 100 grams of protein a day, you're doing really well.
Damn, that's a lot.
It's a lot.
Yeah. So you're
It's a
really
lot.
having to protein load every time you eat. So.
Realistically, 30 to 35 grams every meal. That's an easy way to kind of, I always
Yeah.
try and say, hey, can we master one meal at a time just to hone in on, what are we choosing and how are we putting things together? But, because ideally, you're both resistance training, which requires protein just to recover and accrue additional muscle mass. Also need protein because our bones are living organisms. They require protein for both deconstruction and construction. So you're making sure you have enough on hand. And if we overshoot it a little bit, then at least we know you've had enough.
Yeah, that's definitely tough. For bone health, are there recommended vitamins? We used to be like all about drink your milk and calcium for the bones. What are the new current recommendations?
It's not really, from the current medical system, that's pretty much what we're still being told, in terms of vitamin D and calcium and those types of simple things. Everybody kind of has their own perspective on this. I don't dive a ton into it. I kind of refer that to, a physician or maybe a someone else that's, a nutrition-based person that dives into that question. But I don't think it's much different as far as the current recommendations as they were 10 or 15 years ago.
That makes sense. In terms of like any myths about bones and bone density that you've heard that you want to retire, are there
Yeah.
myths about bones?
Yeah, I think most people think of their bones as a non-living thing. So once they've lost their bone, it's, I think education is becoming much more robust around this, but many people think that they're not able to change it, that they're not dynamic enough to change. And that's absolutely not true, and it's regardless of age, because I've got women that are close to, if not 80 years older or older, and we've seen positive changes. So the bone is very much a dynamic living tissue, and we just have to make sure we're intentionally targeting and meeting ourselves where we are with our fitness, to influence it to go in the right direction.
Yeah, I think people do think they're just born with a set of bones and they are what they are, but they wither away and then you can build it back.
Yeah, I mean, there's two specific cells. One is, I kind of think of it as the when you do it, let's say you're going to redo your kitchen, you have the destruction crew come in, they blow up the kitchen, and the construction crew comes in and fixes it. Well, your bones are doing that every day of your
Yeah,
life.
break down and remodel and build back up.
Exactly. And both are healthy. They both have to happen to have a strong bone.
Any thoughts on posture? I do think that that's also an issue that we should work on when we're always so forward, downward facing and getting tech neck concerns.
Yeah, posture can definitely be influential because we, especially from an exercising perspective, we need to be strong enough to maintain specific postures to be able to load our body appropriately to see change, right? I like to look at posture on, the other 23 and a half hours that we're not exercising, right? Is making sure we're moving our bodies throughout the day enough. Because even if we have quote unquote great posture, we're still fatiguing the muscles. So from a posture perspective, if we spend too much time in one position, we overwork those muscles to where we can essentially, at some point, we'll see some negative things happening, whether it's muscle soreness or pain or just over-reliance on a certain body posture that our body refers to all the time. So there's a lot of value in making sure throughout the day you're just changing your body position as much as you can, which also helps us stay more active in general.
Yeah, they're saying that sitting is the new smoking. So,
I can imagine.
yeah, so you got to get out of your chair and be doing some mobility work all day long. Well, this has been so interesting. I know you also do your own podcast. What's the name of your podcast?
It's called the Bone Health Blueprint.
And if people wanted to reach out to find you also have an online training platform and Trubi, it's called Trubi Health.
TrubyHealth.com is a great website to get kind of the lowdown on all the ways that you can engage and work with me. And then also Instagram. There's always Instagram,
Yeah.
Nick Truby.
Well, you're out there motivating people. So I came across your content and I thought I need to talk to him. He's
That's
motivating.
amazing. No, thank you for that. It's always good to hear some positive feedback.
Yeah, I think we're told a lot to work on strength training, resistance training. It's this extremely intimidating process. And also you just need to start. So if someone tells me like the top five exercises I need to just bust out, I can handle that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And just approaching it with, from a perspective of, not having to master it right away, right? I think there's a lot of stress and feeling like you have to be perfect all the time. So give yourself a little time and a little grace to ease your way into it. And I think there's a lot of value in just building confidence and realizing that what your body is still capable of achieving, regardless of where your level is currently. I think what follows with that is a lot of gratitude and motivation to continue.
That's great. Nick, tell us your Instagram handle and where people can reach out or email you.
Absolutely. Dr. Nick, Nick, Truby, Trubee.
That's on the gram.
That's on the gram. You're right.
Okay, perfect. Well, I thank you so much for joining us. I learned a lot about bones and muscles today, and I think that's going to be my focus for this year going forward. I want everybody out there also thinking about it. And boy, we have a lot of protein to eat at every meal. So we have
Give
our work
yourself
cut
some
out.
time. It's not going to be a perfect transition. Slowly get
That's
there.
right. It's a process.
Yeah.
That's it for now, guys. Don't forget to find me on my Instagram. It's Beauty by Dr. K, Drkay, where we're doing amazing things with Basis Health, Longevity, and Wellness. And you can find our amazing skincare at beautybydrk.com. It's a peptide skincare line. Peptides are all the rage, and we're going to do more podcasts on that. Peptides that are used for muscle changes as well. So much interesting research out there. That's it for now, guys. Stay beautiful.